And after 3 million years of Homo sapiens fucking up her Eden, God looked down on her ruined paradise and said, holy shit, what a bunch of assholes. So God made a fuck you gardener. God said, I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, plant defensively, work all day in the sun and the rain, water transplants, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight, disassembling the power grid. So God made a fuck you gardener. I need somebody with arms gentle enough to water the frailest seedling and yet strong enough to snuff out his glyphosate-using neighbor. Somebody to call the chickens by the names, because the people now, too, destroy cantankerous machinery, come home hungry, have to wait to make lunch until the plants and then animals are all tended to, and say, I don't mind waiting and mean it. So God made a fuck you gardener. God said, I need somebody willing to sit up all night with a newborn colt and watch it die, and then dry her eyes and say, maybe next year. I need somebody who can shape an axe handle from a persimmon and sprout, shoe a horse with a hunk of car tire, and who can make a trellis out of twine. Who, planting time and harvest season, will finish their 40-hour work week by Tuesday noon, and then back painted from hornworm squishing will put in another 72 hours. So God made a fuck you, gardener. God had to have somebody willing to use soap and water on every leaf and yet stop in midfield and race to help when he sees a tree in danger of being cut down. So God made a fuck you, gardener. God said, I need somebody strong enough to replant trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to rewild lambs and pigs and tend the pink comb pullets, who will stop working her compost for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. It had to be somebody who'd practice no-dig methods of cultivation or container gardening and not cut corners. Somebody to seed, weed, feed, plant, and dry the beans and juice the melons and collect their own urine and finish a hard week's work with a 5-mile bike ride to the farmer's market. Somebody who would bale a family together with the soft, strong bonds of sharing. Who would laugh and then sigh and then reply with smiling eyes, when her husband says, babe, good thing we didn't add to the population. So God made a fuck you gardener.
On planet Earth, at the peak of human ingenuity, we still haven't managed to save ourselves from two brave souls have decided to take on our enemy to prevent the world from falling into the
let motherfuckers fear the climate change. Let motherfuckers fear the climate change.
Let's talk about some fucking gardening.
Yeah, yo.
Hello, I'm JP Hurst.
And I'm Casey Snow.
And today we are going to
dig a little bit deeper into that maximum carbon sinkhole.
We think that you should grow a fucking attack garden. And in today's episode, we aim to convince you of that. Casey, it's not often that we set out to try to convince people to change their behavior. Today is that rare exception.
It is. It's true. We try to let people come to things on their own, but when it comes to gardening, this is required.
Yeah. So from now on, after this episode, all future episodes of Maximum Carbon Sinkhole will require you to plug your headphones into the nearest tomato plant.
That's right. That's right.
We've got the science for that. We've engineered
it. It's GMO'd to be an MP3 player. I guess.
Plants produce electricity.
Fucking A.
We've got our best and brightest scientists on this.
We do. We do.
It's the technology that we need.
So if you haven't noticed, we're pro-GMO.
All kinds of cool shit.
As long as it turns out to play music.
They're like, listen, this corn also doubles as tar paper for the roof of houses. I mean, we can put all kinds of shit in there.
Exactly. Exactly. You just have to grow it using crude oil
and straight
and E. coli, pure E. coli.
This GMO soybean works perfect as a lubricant in the axle of 6-ton trucks.
However, if you get within 5 feet, you melt.
But handle with care. Yeah, handle with care. Yeah.
If you just read the label.
Yeah.
Read the label.
Not to be used as popcorn. Great as axle lubricant.
Can I just say, so when I was at my master gardener meeting and I was saying that I do not feel comfortable being within an organization that promotes the use of toxic chemicals. And she said, well, you know, I know with the one lawsuit, the man was not using the product as it says on the label.
Oh, man.
Oh, you're right. If we just use carcinogens properly
right
on our food, That's cool.
There's a specific limit that you can, listen, it's poison.
But okay? You can ingest it. It's fine. It's just if you inhale it or get it on your skin or look at it for too long, you get fucking Hodgkin's leukemia or whatever the fuck.
We aim for a lot of this content to be evergreen, but that was just some breaking news that you dropped right there.
Yeah.
You've formally dropped out of the Master Gardener program.
Yeah, it's
Did you know the first rule of master gardening is you're not supposed to tell anyone you're a master gardener.
Yeah. Well, that's what also was said. She said, well, it's okay. You can be against that. You just can't say you're a master gardener when you say you're against it. And I was like, I guess I'm not a master gardener.
There it is, folks. Casey Snow, no longer a master gardener, has forsaken the practice. I think we're going to have to dive into that today.
Yeah. I think I'm a gardener of mastery.
Oh, I would agree. You should see all the shit that's growing and all the shit we're already starting to eat. And we are not very far into this journey.
And we've already got an army of assassin bugs.
They are a fucking legit army and they're cool as hell.
Yeah, yeah. They're on the banana melon.
We're going to talk about the banana melon. We're going to talk about the snake bean. We're going to talk about the atomic tomato. First, Casey, why is gardening the best way to drop out of dominant culture, the death machine, and say a big old fuck you to the man?
Well, I think one of the biggest reasons is, you walk into the grocery store and you buy some produce and you find out none of it was grown in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a problem, right? The global economy is something that you really need to drop out of in order to completely drop out. And it's a good start with your produce or all of your food, which you could do either.
And you can start with your produce. You could start with just one item of produce.
Yeah, absolutely. A tomato.
Go a little deeper there. Tell us more. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean the global economy is in the produce section?
So the thing is that even when I was a kid, and I'm not that old, you couldn't get grapes year-round. You couldn't get strawberries year-round. You couldn't get blueberries year-round. You couldn't get really much of anything, probably besides a tomato, and they were gross in the winter. Although I didn't really eat tomatoes then, but that's a whole different story. So this food is being possibly, it could even be grown in the U.S., but then it's, put in a can in a different country, and then it's brought to another country for the label, and then another country, and then it comes here. And it's like,
There's all kinds of food, and this doesn't just happen in the U.S., but I agree with you. It's just like you said, the global food industry is one of the largest industries.
Yes.
And it's insane. We grow potatoes in this European country and then they get shipped 4,000 kilometers.
So they get smashed.
Washed and smashed. And then they get shipped back for canning.
Right. It's insane. I mean, look at the global economy is driven entirely by food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because what is the one thing we need to live? It's food and water and air, right? But our food is coming from places that, A, doesn't have anything from our bioregion, so our allergies are worse.
Right.
Right? And then it's all of these fossil fuels are used, mm-hmm. and all these people are abused in other countries, and in our own countries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's full of bad. And it also requires us to work because this food is money. Right? It's not time. It's not effort. It's money.
Yeah.
So we've switched our time from, the time it used to take to grow food, we're doubling that in time we have to make money to buy that food. And we're not getting anything good out of it because a lot of the food is poisoned.
And you mentioned right there too that there's abuse built into the global food industry.
Right.
And farm workers are some of the most vulnerable workers on the planet.
Yeah, you want to talk about...
And the most exploited.
You want to talk about suicides in the military, farmers, man.
Going down.
They're killing themselves left and right, and it's fucking sad. And here's the thing is I grew up in farm country. I grew up in dairy country. Mm-hmm. I grew up in corn and alfalfa and soybeans. I was one of the few kids that wasn't part of a farming family. And, they were big, mostly happy families. I mean, the kids worked hard. They weren't treated like kids today, they were a commodity as well. And that was weird. But at the same time, I thought it was really cool. Like when I'd go and hang out at the dairy farm, and help milk the cows and stare at the giant bull that just wanted to fuck everything. You know, it was a really cool experience. And I never thought of it as exploitative. Of course, you know, I didn't eat animals, but I'd still ate dairy because I'd been to dairy farms and I love the cows. And, you know, I didn't quite put together that they have to continually be bred and all that, you know, because I was a stupid kid. But, you know, those farmers don't exist anymore. And the few that do are killing themselves. Mm-hmm. Any of the ones that have switched over to this mega landscape of farming are killing themselves because they're not farmers anymore. They're just equipment operators.
And unless the farmer is there in a straw fucking hat at the farmer's market,
right?
Unless they have the dirt under their fingernails, and you have your DNA test Theranos sample kit right connected to your iPhone and you're like, I need some fingernail scraping, and then you scrape the eye of the potato and it's like, that's a match. Okay, you grew this. Unless you know the farmer that way.
I think a better test is just to hand your smartphone to the farmer, and if he doesn't know what the fuck it is,
perfect.
He's legit.
I'm gonna buy from you.
Yeah.
Support your local farmer, but it's really hard to find your local farmer.
It really is. And in some places that you'd think it would be easy, it's not. And mm-hmm. that's definitely our experience.
Well, I like what you said earlier about how it's okay to exploit your kids, but if you're exploiting your workers, then you're doing something wrong, right?
Totally. Yeah. That's totally.
Yeah. Abuse your kids, abuse fucking your 14 kids. Hour days in the field.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's the right way
fine.
To do it.
Because guess what? They're learning.
Yeah.
That's fucking school. That's education, right?
So what else is wrong with the global food industry?
Okay. So a major issue is that just the fact of how we're getting our food, and we won't even talk about processed food. Let's even just talk about produce. Just produce alone, the amount of land that's required, mm-hmm. and this is land that is rich land that was rainforest in a lot of cases. Some of that is growing meat, but some of it is also growing palm oil and so on and so forth. And so we are losing like that carbon sink, right? And at the same time, that food is being grown in highly chemical environment, which is mostly petroleum based, and it's sucking water from places that maybe don't have a lot, and then this food is shipped all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I mean, think of how bad it is for each one of us to get on an airplane and go, you know, 2,000 miles. It's terrible for the environment. Your fruit traveled more than that.
Oh yeah.
Your zucchini traveled more than that.
And there's been a lot of books and documentaries, right, that have talked about just the quality of our food and how degraded it's been,
right,
over time.
Right.
The debate with GMOs, which really isn't much of a debate. GMOs contain pesticides and herbicides.
Yeah.
And then you either feed those to cattle and then you eat that, or you eat the pesticides and herbicides.
Yeah.
That's what GMOs are.
Yeah, period.
No one's really worried about the gene splicing. Some people, I'm not. It's that they're like, well, we can put pesticide in it.
Yeah, and let me tell you, when I cut an apple in half and it doesn't rot, I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, we had that experience recently.
It was creepy.
We couldn't get organic apples and we're like, this has been cut for 3 days and it's not bruised or rotting. Let's leave it on the counter and see what happens.
And it didn't rot. It was the weirdest fucking thing. And it's like, that's not a food. That's not natural.
And there's a scientist out there. Again, scientist blinders. Ugh. Are you on the lookout for scientist blinders? Did you listen to our Vaporware episode? It's, oh, this is cool. If one person could have an apple that didn't rot, well, yeah, what if the whole world was full of apples that don't fucking rot?
Yeah, that's
fucked
up.
Does it scale, motherfucker?
Right.
Don't make apples that don't
remember
rot.
Remember planet Earth before the trees could rot? It was just piles of
trees. I remember it. I
remember,
it's like you were just climbing over mountains of sequoias.
I know. You know, it was just crazy.
Can we please get some bacteria and fungus
in
here?
And then we got to the point where there was no air. That's how high it went.
Yeah.
I mean, planet Earth just got huge in the gravity. It was crazy.
Yeah. We were just partying so hard when the fungi showed up. I was like, oh man, you guys have so much to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. And thanks for the fun.
As such, you may know, again, that the food you're buying at the store is bad for you.
But it's not just the chemicals. It's the fact that the reason that this particular breed of zucchini travels to your grocery store is because it travels well. It's not because it's nutritious or flavorful. Mm-hmm. It's because it fucking ships and it stores.
Yeah.
You know, all of that shit, all of it, every variety of, you know, green bean, potato, it's all chosen for profit.
And this is my big problem with the labor movement too, is that you have an environmental movement that's like, less carbon, let's go get a hamburger.
Right.
And then you have a labor movement that's like, don't exploit farm workers, let's go get a hamburger.
It's always a fucking hamburger, man.
Always a hamburger.
Or a pizza.
Yeah, let's get some pepperoni pizza.
It's fucking crazy.
And then you have, you know, like a Eat Local or, you know, people that are promoting farmers markets. And they are on the food tip, but then they also don't connect it to the carbon and labor problems.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're saying grow a fuck you garden to connect these goddamn problems, because exactly. They're goddamn fucking connected.
Yeah, they're all fucking connected. Think about it. Our food is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have a grocery store, think of what other stores wouldn't exist.
Another reason that growing a fuck you garden, even if you start small at first, we've started small. We're slowly expanding. This is a thing that can grow exponentially.
I think we're quickly expanding.
We might be quickly expanding. Another reason that it's the best way to take personal direct action, and why gardening is the best way to start dropping out, you mentioned this earlier, it straight means you have to earn less money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the time, people are always like, well, I don't have the time to do that. I don't have the time to garden. I don't have the time to garden. Casey, what do you always say about the time?
It pays better. It's fair pay, man. It is fucking fair pay. I go out there and I'm on my knees and I'm inspecting leaves. I'm not like, oh my God, if this day could just fucking end. I have not yet once. I've been tired. Don't get me wrong. There's been some long days where I'm like, okay, it'd be nice to sit down. But I'm never, you know what I'm not doing? I'm not surfing the internet trying to waste time.
Not watching the clock.
I'm not watching the clock. It's always the opposite. Oh my God, it's already 4 o'clock. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I've just been hanging out with the animals, man.
Yeah.
I'm counting the hummingbirds.
And then there's stress for sure. You know, the seed's not coming up. Oh, Jesus Christ.
The package says 10 days. It's been 20. What happened?
And then 22 days it comes up and you're like, Jesus.
Gardens further allow you to get out of the machine. Also, if you go ham with it.
Ham.
That means hard as a motherfucker, Casey.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. I spend a little more time online than Casey does, unfortunately, for my job. Which, you know, we've said before, we're like sort of half dropped out. So
yeah. So I'm sorry. We have to go back to this ham thing.
Ham. Yeah.
Is this like?
It's an acronym.
I got that when you said the words. Yeah. I know the definition of acronym. But is this a lot like on fleek?
You know, I'm not an expert. I'm just grabbing onto things.
So you saw ham where?
Ham is just, it's a good way to text people that you're going at it.
See, I hate when people text me those acronyms because I have to look them up. I never know what the fuck they are. I'm like, what is this? I don't fucking know.
We know a couple, like 4 or 5 LOL speaks. I just added a 6 right there, ham.
I'm not going to retain that.
Hard as a motherfucker. So we've been going ham with the garden. And if you go mega ham, you can start a CSA. You can grow at farmers markets. You can kickstart your local barter's economy. We're saying that because we thought, well, shit, we're doing pretty good right now with our 50 vegetable bags and our 50, 60, maybe 70 fruit trees and bushes right now.
And our random squash that's just decided that it wants to grow.
We've got a bunch of weird volunteers.
Yeah, tons. Tomatoes, squash, and peppers.
And then we'll talk about this in a little bit. We've even started to recognize, well, shit, there was already some food growing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we didn't know that.
Yeah. And this is why we think gardening is your best way to dropping out.
And your quickest and best vector to take direct action that actually means something.
And to be ham. Also, I think I like it.
And a final point on why gardening, we think, is your quickest and best path to start dropping out is that it changes your fucking brain, man.
It does. It does. It totally does.
We're less than a year in. Okay, we're not that far ahead of you.
Yeah, right? I'm not. I am not a master gardener.
No, you're not. I'm definitely not.
And I'm not an expert gardener either. I am super novice and untrained, unskilled. But I'm ham.
Oh no, she's going ham, folks. We went ham on some hornworms yesterday.
Oh, and a little bit this morning.
A little bit this morning.
Yeah, we did. We fucking squished those motherfuckers.
I was like, I'm going to stay in the concrete. Look at all these and smash them.
Yeah, yeah.
There was some good green coloring there. We could use it in paints or stains or something.
Yeah, you're right. Second art, second world art.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, you get down on your hands and knees and you're digging in the dirt, or you're, I guess we don't really dig in the dirt, but you know, our hands are in the dirt, and it's weird to just see the connection of plant life to your own life and how much healthier you feel just being in that air and in that, you know, there's, you know, microbes in the soil that feed the plant and they feed you, and they're important to us. And we've washed all of that away with our antibacterial soaps and our super clean this and our super clean that. And the thing is that super clean isn't really what we think it is.
The more time you spend in the dirt, the less you're afraid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, I can eat a little bit.
I mean,
of dirt.
Finally, JP doesn't mind that I never wash my hands.
Yeah, I've gotten over that. I've always liked it that she had dirt on her face at all times. But it's been until recently that
it's
strange,
like, that it was when we lived in the city too.
Yeah. Like, we have been outside all day. I appreciate that you're starting to cook dinner, however.
I mean, this is a great advertisement. Don't eat at our house.
But it's magical out there. And what's not outside? There's no web browser outside. Nope. And there's no advertisements in the fucking garden.
Zero ads. Although, I guess there are for the pollinators, because all the flowers definitely bring everybody in flocks.
They're flashing over here, over here. Yeah. And that's a good point. The pollinators they got a lot of choice.
Yeah, they do. But I
here
know,
anyway.
Yeah.
Not outside.
Right.
There's less and less choice out
there's
there.
There's less and less.
But here it's a bonanza.
It's a bonanza.
Everything's on sale. Yeah. Come, we're flat over here, guys.
Yeah.
Everybody wants a piece of you. All right. So that's the top of the hour there.
Yeah.
That's why gardening is the best way to start dropping out. Have we convinced you yet? Are you gardening curious? Are you thinking about it? Here's what else we're gonna talk about. We're going to talk about the immediate personal benefits, and then we're also going to talk about incendiary uses for your attack garden. Oh, no. Attack gardens, not just a metaphor. No. Casey.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some personal benefits of gardening.
Cool.
Like the attack garden, the concept of the attack garden, the concept of using your attack garden to drop out. That's an attack on the machine, attack on dominant culture, attack on the carbon economy and consumerism and global trade, yep. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the abuse, all the modern day slavery, yep. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what you're doing for the world.
Yeah.
But personally, and this might be one of the best reasons
for
to start gardening, is that the personal benefits feel so tangible so quickly in a way that you never get from all that fucking activism you've soured on. Oh, I'm sorry. I was projecting there. From all that activism that you may have soured on, or you might suspect, doesn't mean a goddamn fucking
right.
thing.
Right.
Casey, what are some personal benefits of growing your own fucking food?
You don't have to sign a petition.
Oh, God. I don't get any text messages asking for money.
Nope.
Wonderful.
Nope. Yeah. So I would say here's the thing, is that a lot of people think that I don't have time. I don't have time to garden. And I would say, first of all, don't ever say I don't have time for something, because you do. You have time for everything. You have to make time for it. So take the time and make the time to try to garden, because you will be happier. You will. You will be healthier physically and mentally, which makes you happier. It doesn't matter where you live, what your economic situation is. Anything, you get out there and you start trying to grow your own food, or growing some food for some pollinators. You are outside and you are putting a seed in the ground and watching it actually grow into a thing. It changes your perspective.
And what we've lost with all our modernity is not just skills, but it's the ability to see a different outcome from our own hands.
Absolutely.
From our own labor.
Absolutely.
We're so disconnected from feeling like our lives matter.
Right.
And from feeling like we have any agency over what happens in our lives.
Yep.
But when you put a simple seed in the ground and some shit happens and you can watch it and you know that the world is different right before your eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you can share that with someone else.
Yeah.
That leads to better mental stability.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Gardening is the best coping mechanism we've found. Now, as you mentioned earlier, you scale up to now where you're trying to farm, and now you're trying to go against industrial agriculture.
Right.
Suicide.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So there's the personal garden. Yeah. There's definitely a size that I think is manageable with just a few people, and then as soon as you, and basically, as big as your family. I mean, yeah. Really, because that's initially. And
it could be the family in your dooryard. It could be your neighbors or friends or something
like that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
In the UK, as JA has said, they have allotments over there where there are publicly set aside spaces that anybody can sort of claim.
Right. Right. And there are some community gardens in some more progressive cities and stuff like that, rooftop gardens.
So whatever you call your family.
Right.
Is a good size.
Absolutely. And it's not that gardening is no stress, but the stress is totally different. And it's tangible, and more than anything, I think you learn to a little bit of acceptance of failure, mm-hmm. and also a great deal of patience. And those are things that I think you really need in order to truly be happy.
Agreed.
You know, especially because I think more and more people have anxiety problems, because guess what? It sucks out there. Uh-huh. It sucks. And whether you've actually had really bad experiences or just normal, you know, experiences, there's a lot of anxiety. You get out in the garden and that anxiety goes at first because you're like, oh my God, I did something wrong. But you soon realize that you're really not in control of that seed.
Yeah.
You might be in control of the worms. You can control that. And you can help the seed. You can put it in its ideal. But even in its ideal state, it may say, no. Nah.
And there she means the tomato hornworms, because you can squish them. She doesn't mean the actual dirt worms, which are our new gods.
Yeah, our new gods.
As we've established before.
Yeah.
I like that. You're right. And sometimes when some shit fails, you can go to the textbooks.
Yeah.
What happened here? Yeah. Is it my soil pH? Did I plant at the wrong time of year?
Right.
What, did it get a little too cold last night? Did I plant it too close to something else?
Did it get too hot?
Yeah. What's going on? Oh, was I
too
supposed
wet, too dry?
Supposed to start this inside? Oh, it's in me. And so there's some fun science and shit you can do.
But some of it, I just honestly think some plants you might just not get along with.
Totally
they might
agree.
Not like you. You might not like them. It's just the way you like to interact with plants. They're like, no, maybe you're somebody who likes to neglect plants, and some plants don't like that. But
to your point of acceptance, when this shit happens, if there's not an immediate answer, you learn to just say, well, okay.
Okay. I mean, I'll try again.
Shit happens. I mean, we look around at the stuff that was already here, that's already growing, the food that we've learned, the wild food that was growing. And, you know, now that we've been in a place and started to notice patterns,
right,
phenology.
Exactly.
As we discussed with Mark Heinlein about his book, The Ground Truth, we've started to notice some years are just more productive than others.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we had been cataloging this specific space for 100 years, we may have figured it out.
Right, right.
But
because it might have been environmental, it might have been the colder winter or a milder winter, or maybe they're just cyclical. They just say, we produce a lot every 3 years.
Today, you know what? I'm going to work on my mid-level branches and my tall leaves this year. You know what? I'm not going to worry about the fruit.
Exactly.
Last year, I made a lot of flowers. It was great. But, you know, I just like, you know, plants, they have stretch goals too.
Yeah,
you know?
They do. They do, without a doubt.
They're trying to, you know what? You know what? I'm going to get my root under the concrete driveway today. I'm just going to get it under there. And so that's what's happening in the vegetable garden too.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just like, I don't fucking know, but it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
Nope, that was my window for cucumbers. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
No big deal.
No big deal. It becomes a bigger deal when you are trying to grow food to feed yourself.
Yeah.
I guess. But then you also have to plant for that, you know, redundancy and plan for failures and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's an art as much as it is a science, as much as it is a passive, just see what happens.
Just let it go, man.
Yeah.
Another immediate benefit, you're sort of hitting on it there, is that the quality time that you can spend with your loved ones or your family is immense.
It really is. You know, a lot of people, again, are like, well, I don't have time for that. You know, I had a full-time job, I got the kids or whatever. And first you make time. And when you get home from work, what do? You probably fuck around TV. And I know you got to unwind. I get it.
Yeah.
But, you know, processing some of your vegetables or fruits together as a family, or, you know, a dooryard extended family or whatever it is, it's a great way to spend time with each other. You know, put those fucking devices away, put work away, put school away, put it all away and just focus on, hey, these loquats are fucking delicious. Oh my God, this is a huge bounty.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
And there's some conceptual framework around this too. That's the idea of frugal hedonism, as in you're slowing down, you're purposely slowing down, or maybe you're backwardsly mobile. But in any case, you're enjoying some of these finer moments, some of these quieter moments.
Yeah.
And we have come to really look forward to, oh, today is a specific day to, again, very early into this gardening thing, but today is a specific day to harvest whatever.
Right.
You mentioned loquats. We got about a gallon-sized colander. It takes us about an hour to fill it up because we're on the ladder and we're grabbing stuff. And it takes us about an hour to process it and put it in the dehydrator. It's like our date.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great.
It's free.
Great. It's fun. We laugh. We fail. We drop a bunch and they explode and we're sad. And then the squirrels have taken a bite out of 16 of them.
Yeah. The juiciest ones. You're like, all right, squirrel. I get it. You need some too. But yeah, sitting around and just talking about the day.
Yeah. And I mean, think about it. What is, you know, this whole yoga thing that's taken off, you know, a lot of it has to do with being present. You
right.
know, and you know, now it's marketed and it's diluted and it's bullshit. But I mean, that is something that we have kind of lost the ability to do, is just be in the present moment, because we're constantly striving for the next day and planning for the next thing. And oh my God, I've got this next thing. And you know, gardening forces your presence.
Yeah, you have to be there. And it's a nice place to be.
Yeah.
You mentioned that when you're in the garden too, you're also making a fair wage. While not looking at spreadsheets. Another great ancillary benefit of gardening, which we did not expect, is that it's been fantastic exercise.
Holy shit, man. Fuck a gym. You know what? The garden is the gym. It's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And you can like really burn it if you want to. And you know, the more infrastructure you have, the less work. But I mean, you're up and down, up and down, up and down. You don't realize, you know, you're kind of almost doing plank constantly all day because you're up and down and up and down and up and down.
That's
and
true.
Up and
yeah,
down.
You're working your core.
Working your core.
That's a funny idea that should be added to the permaculture design edges, design interfaces. This idea. It's like, well, yeah, you want to get your water infrastructure in place, but if you don't and you're carrying watering cans around everywhere, that's a great exercise.
Exactly. You could even have it be like little areas or your different tone regions. You know? This is the arm region where you're using your watering cans, and this is your you know, where you do your planks. That's how you get the weeds. You know,
you have to get down and get them with your teeth. Yeah. That's a good idea,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And although we mentioned that there have been many documentaries and books and exposés on the benefits of dropping out of the global food production system health-wise, Casey, what are the personal benefits nutrition-wise that somebody could get out of growing their own food?
Well, first of all, especially if you're growing heirlooms, which is the only thing I really recommend that you grow, you're getting some nutrients that have been basically locked away from us. You know, the food that's shipped around isn't shipped around because it's good for you. It's shipped around because it produces the best profit by not getting bruised or not rotting or whatever.
The highest yield.
Yeah.
And heirloom seed there, in this case, means a seed variety that's been around for a long time.
Right.
It's an heirloom. It's been passed through generations and generations.
Exactly. Yeah.
And has retained those benefits without getting affected by the right. modern food production system.
Exactly. So but what's most amazing and something that's easily forgotten is that the more the nutrition generally, the better it tastes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna find that, you know, while usually you use a lot of salt or you use a lot of spice on this certain vegetable, you don't have to do that anymore because guess what? It actually tastes like something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it tastes like something.
Yeah, we have found accidentally that we've started eating more of a raw food diet, which has its own health benefits.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the biggest bonuses, I think, to eating a raw food diet is that you're not using energy or taking the time to do excess preparation.
Absolutely.
Just pick it, cut it, you're eating it.
Yeah.
Holy shit, we just had a meal.
Yeah, and you're getting all those bioavailable extras that are on it that are either, you know, taken away by heat or cold, right? And it has been, it's been accidental, you know. The first zucchini that we harvested, it was enormous, the biggest zucchini I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, apprehensive to try it, sure, because mm-hmm. that's weird. It was the most delicious thing I've had ever. And like, it was sweet. It was, it had this almost buttery flavoring. Mm-hmm. It was delicious.
And no chemicals.
No chemicals. None. And when I was in the Master Gardener program, I was told more than five times that if you're going to grow vegetables in Florida, you're wasting your time if you're trying to do it without chemical fertilizers and chemicals to kill pests.
Let's do a segue real quick. Why is the Master Gardener program fucked, ultimately?
It's fucked because it's run by the industry. So Master Gardener programs, I'm probably not going to get this history exactly right, but they're in place because there was some sort of land trust. This goes back to like George Washington or something. And it was universities had to share their knowledge with the rest of the state because they didn't want it to be this elite institution that didn't share the knowledge. So the Master Gardener program is born from that. It's a way to share the skills and knowledge of gardening with each community. So there's each county has to have a basically a Master Gardener program.
So each county has a Master Gardener program that is administered usually by the state university
system.
It
is only by the state university. So the university is in charge. Now
who's in charge of the university?
Exactly. So that's the problem. Who's in charge of the university? And University of Florida is very much that the agriculture department is entirely in the hands of big companies. So, you know, what they suggest is that you use Roundup. Mm-hmm. They actually, as long as you follow the label. Now, sure, they want a quote, Florida-friendly landscaping, which is less water and less chemicals, but they don't tell you you shouldn't.
Yeah, the gardening program here is mostly for landscape designers about choosing the right kind of ficus for your turf.
Yeah, it's all about turf grass. And yeah, they want you to have less, and they suggest less, but you never tell. You're never supposed to say, oh, no, you shouldn't have grass, but you shouldn't. And we know that. And that's the thing is they teach, well, you know, all this nitrogen is polluting our waters, our aquifers, but they still suggest using it just in limited quantities. Well, how about no grass? Mm-hmm. Why do we have to perpetuate this? And that's the thing. It's they're part of the machine. And if anything, the more I was in this Master Gardener program, the more I saw that, you know what universities are? They're just perpetuators of the machine
right
now. They are no longer independent institutions that are trying to find knowledge, seeking knowledge and seeking the better. It's just, who's our donors? Okay, let's do that.
And you could see it happen even in a benign way. Like how does regulatory capture work? How does university capture work? Is, hey, here's a $5 million grant over 10 years. I'm a big company. I want you, big ag school, to study how my chemical use or and how do I increase the yield on my peanuts?
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
And then over time, because they've been conditioned to do this study and over again, the brain capture and the systematic teaching comes out of only the questions that were asked of the school by the big companies.
Right. Right.
So that becomes the gospel.
Right. But I think the bigger problem is that information is given in a very, I don't know, dark way, because what a lot of people are saying is, well, but we need to feed the world.
Right. Bullshit.
How do we feed all these people?
GMOs
without,
are important.
Exactly. And so it's sad because, you know, somebody who was born in the machine and has never even seen light, right, goes into an agriculture program and they think they're doing, and they might even be doing it because they're like, man, I just feel bad for people in third world countries. They don't have any food. I wanted to help try to create a food for them. And I mean, that's a great, you know, that's a kind and respectable reason to get into something. However, they never question the fact that, well, this is actually not going to feed people. It's going to poison people, and it's going to make people dependent on the machine now, even though these people at one point in the third world country maybe weren't living great, but they weren't getting grinded up by the machine, because once the machine's in there, they're poor people in the machine, and those people get grinded up quick.
Yeah. And that's the biggest affront that GMOs have, right? All the supporters of GMOs, they use that phrase. Well, 2 billion people would starve. if it weren't for our GMOs.
Right.
And what they're really saying is that we have an extra 2 billion consumers. Nobody gives a fuck. Monsanto and Bayer don't give a fuck about feeding the third world.
No.
But the GMOs, they show up because we can have higher yields with more chemical inputs. And if we're growing our food and then exporting it or exporting our seeds, we are displacing the gardeners and the farmers that are there.
You're right, who are eating local foods, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and they're eating nutritious foods. Maybe not enough, for sure. Okay. But we need to deal with that problem, not that. And usually it's because they're in a third world country that's, you know, got all kinds of other issues, not just food. The food is more secondary or third area or whatever, you know. And but so I do think a lot of these people are getting into these programs for good reasons, but they're in the machine, and the machine is the university. Mm-hmm. And I would like to do a whole episode on how universities are perpetuating evil in all kinds of ways. But right now we're just talking about gardening.
And at universities, again, carbon, ecology, labor,
right,
exploitive labor practices,
right,
exploitive capital practices, and food quality and food safety, none of these things are being talked about.
No,
right?
No,
it's just at the ag schools, as you've learned, it's just about perpetuating.
And I, let me tell
how
you,
we do things.
I'm sure you're surprised, but in each one of the classes, I, you know, my hands up in the air and I'm ready to fucking scream, you know, and point out the fallacy of what they're saying. And almost every time they were like, well, you know, you haven't tried to grow anything yet, so you know, you'll find out how hard it is.
You'll find out. You're not going to like squishing those horns.
And I was,
hands. You're going to need to spray chemicals on them.
Yeah. And that's what I mean, I honestly was worried the first seeds we put in, and I did have some major failures, but they were my own. It was, I planted things too close to each other and all that stuff. But now what I'm finding is it's just, you have to be present, and you have to be willing to say, okay, I'm going to walk through the garden every day. And not just water, but look at each plant and make sure I see before something happens.
And why did you do the Master Gardener program? So you've officially formally dropped out of it. But at first, when we had not grown anything, you thought, well, this is how I'll learn.
Yeah. So I wanted a butterfly garden. I wanted something for pollinators. I wanted fruit trees. And I wanted to try to garden. I hadn't done shit. The only thing I ever did was when I lived in the ghetto of Milwaukee, and I know you're not supposed to say ghetto, but I lived in the ghetto, so I get to say ghetto. I had it was polished dirt because the dogs ran on it so much that the dirt was like, had a nice shine to it. And I planted a watermelon seed accidentally, and it grew, and it was like the coolest fucking thing in the world, right? And so I've always had a fascination with it. And so it was like, here we are, we have some land. I want to learn how to grow stuff. And I thought, what an amazing opportunity.
There's a free program.
There's a free program that I can learn growing specifically in this area. Oh my God, this is amazing. And what I was beyond thrilled. I was like, I was giddy. And this was 2 days, full days a week, I think, for 6 or 8 weeks. And, I was at the end, I was still waiting to learn how to grow vegetables because it was really about ornamentals and lawns, because that's what the public's most interested in.
And
that's what they told me.
And that's what they sell at the home improvement stores.
Right.
Stuff for landscaping.
Right. And
it doesn't do anybody fucking any good in the machine if you're growing food at home. That doesn't benefit anyone. Why would we teach people to do that? There's no comeback.
There's no comeback. Yeah.
We can't teach people to be self-sufficient.
Exactly. Yeah. And
it's like your joke. You said that the reason that suicide is illegal is because dead people don't buy anything.
Right. They don't. That's true. And so I just couldn't. I was still excited because I was like, I had opportunities to get plants, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And to learn some stuff. And even though most of it always started with, well, you might want to spray this first. But what I really realized was they're perpetuating the old story, and I don't want to be a fucking part of it.
Oh, yes. It's springtime here in the UK. And here's how I know. Because the local discount homeware shop has posters for slug pellets and weed killers in the window, saying, time to get in the garden. Seriously, what the fuck? Oh, man. It's like I don't mind a bit of the outdoor world, as long as I can completely dominate it with chemicals and it looks neat as fuck. It really feels like an act of protest or rebellion by not doing these things, not controlling, not using chemicals, just trying to create a space where creatures can come and not have their lives in fucking danger. Just think, all farming and horticulture organic until about 100 years ago, right? Doing stuff organically is much harder work. Since when did every single aspect of life have to be so fucking easy? I bought a big bag of native wildflower seeds and I'm just going out scattering them. Wherever there's some bare soil, roadsides, molehills, whatever. It just feels so puny and pathetic to be doing in the scheme of things. It's like, what did you do in the war? Well, I skipped through the country lanes, spreading a few seeds. I'm just doing it for the insects, really, as there's so little biodiversity around here. But maybe, just maybe, some old fuckers might see the flowers and think, oh yeah, it did used to be like that. We've lost our way. Yeah, right.
The universities are perpetuating the old story.
Yeah, so Master Gardener program is perpetuating the old story, and they're doing it big time because here's the thing. So they would always defend themselves every time because, of course, they were always on the defense when I was asking questions because there's water restrictions because in the winter here, it's droughty. It's the dry season. And so it's to conserve water. You're not allowed to water your lawns, right? And I you know, raise my hands. Yeah, but everybody does. So who's policing that? Well, nobody. It's self-policing. Cool. It's not working very well. I know. And then same with chemicals, both fertilizer and pesticides. You're not allowed. It's against the law to apply fertilizer and other chemicals from, I believe it's November to March.
Why?
My question was, so how come you can still buy it at Home Depot or Walmart during that time? How do people know that? Well, it's on our website. Cool.
Why is it illegal to apply fertilizer then?
Because it's poisoning the aquifer.
Okay.
So they're trying to limit. There is limits even in the summer. You're only supposed to do it twice a week or something. There's limits to how much fertilizer you're allowed to put on. There's limits. It doesn't say that on any packaging. Mm-hmm. It says, see your local whatever. And nobody reads the label. Mm-hmm. Nobody. And there's nobody policing it. So it doesn't work. And so that's what we're supposed to say is, oh, no, you can use glyphosate. You just have to follow labels and only use it during this time. Like, that's not okay. Oh, you want a lawn? Oh, this is the best grass you should get. You shouldn't use this grass because it uses too much water. But if you do choose that one, here's the chemicals you should use. Mm-hmm. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
So if going into a master gardener program is not the right way to get started gardening, Casey, how would you recommend people get the fuck started? Because you should get the fuck started tomorrow.
You know what, though? Here's the thing. Go to the master gardener program because you know what? The more people who raise their hands and say this is bullshit, the better, right? So it's not the worst thing. And you get some free seeds, although I wouldn't use any of them. None of them are heirloom. They want you to use the GMO seeds.
You might get some cool flowers.
And there is a decent native flower, you know, thing that usually happens within it.
And it's a little bit like how what we're telling CCR about school right now, which is we're like, listen, we know a lot of this is bullshit, okay? We know that there's the old story here. We see it in your homework. However, to fight the machine, you got to learn what's on the inside.
That's true. However, I will say, I think hands down, the best way to start gardening is buy some seeds and just do it. Because you're going to fail, but you're going to learn from it. And you might not fail because believe it or not, it's crazy. Shit wants to grow. Mm-hmm. It legit is like, thank you. We've been waiting for this.
And don't worry, like, well, I was going to build the thing first, or I need to get my fence up, or like, I don't know if I get it. I don't know if sure I had enough shade, or I got to clear this area. Just like kick. Literally, get some seeds, just kick it with the heel of your boot, and then like forget about them, like water them, just right. See what the fuck happens.
Yeah.
Man. Like, it's a great way to get started.
It really is. Yeah. And if you want flowers, this is recently taught to me. If you're into flowers and you just want to try some, try zinnias. Apparently, anybody can grow them, and they're pretty.
And on that last point, JA from the UK just wrote us in to say that he has felt in his garden that neglect has been the best medicine for it.
Absolutely.
Just and let that's it do the its thing, man.
Everybody tells me, because I've got a bunch of orchids. I love orchids. And people are like, I'm terrible with orchids, terrible. And I tell you, if you just forget about them and then, you know, the once a month, oh shit, the fucking orchids, you'll go out there and be like, oh my God, they're blooming again.
Doesn't gardening sound awesome, right? Right? Are you convinced yet? And if you're thinking, all right, you know what? I'm into it. I get the metaphor. It's an attack on the fucking man.
Yeah.
It's attack on the system. It's attack on the global economy. It's an attack on modern day slavery and the conditions that people have
it's
to work in.
It's attack on modern medicine.
Mm-hmm. Food is the best medicine. Yeah. Let's fucking do that.
Yeah, and exercise is good too.
There you are. Like, are you convinced? Are you like, I need to get this gardening thing sounds amazing. Like, I should do that, right? Is there an app that I can download, or is there a subscription service that'll deliver seeds to my fucking door every month? No.
No.
No. Just go get some fucking seeds, man.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing is Maximum Carbon Sinkhole wants to start a seed bank. Like, we want to do that. We'd like to have a seed exchange program. We're a little ways away from that, but think of that, and that's definitely something.
If you need some ideas, write us. We'll send you some seeds. How about that? We'll make it fucking easy.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So just go out there. But Casey, as we previewed earlier, attack gardens can also be used for incendiary purposes of actually attacking the machine.
That's true.
Right? It's not just a metaphor. It's not just about your health. It's not just about eating better. Casey, what are some things that you can do with your attack garden to physically fight the machine?
So you can actually use your fruit as weapons.
Give me an example.
So I would suggest walking into a police station with a bushel of tomatoes and just start throwing them at everybody that's got a uniform on.
Great idea.
You'll get arrested.
But you will have made a bold statement.
Yeah, exactly.
Using non-lethal force.
Exactly.
Yeah, tomatoes are great to throw.
And you can be like, look, I knew this wouldn't hurt them. They're non-GMO.
Tomatoes great to throw at cops, at politicians, at preachers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If there's a kid in your neighborhood on a bike, just chuck it at them. You're like, it's just a tomato. Right? This is relevant, too. Another way that you could use your attack garden to physically fight the machine and fight off what's coming for us all is you can get a horde of bees or wasps.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm serious. JP has learned the hard way that if you talk to especially the red wasps, we have these beautiful red wasps. If you talk to them, they are cool. They will not fuck with you. And
I didn't talk to him enough. And he got fucked right with voice. Yeah. I'm nursing two stings. They hurt worse today than yesterday. But don't kill the wasps. Get your fucking hornet and wasp spray. Put that fucking shit down.
Yeah, do not.
They're fine. Yeah. They're fine. Like, people come over, like, they were in the trailer once when we were somewhere. And, oh, my God.
Out.
Just, like, do you want me to take care? No, just leave
them,
man.
Just wasps.
It's fine.
They're cool.
It's fine.
Just tell them I'm coming. I'll be just a second. Don't worry about it. They
stung me because I didn't talk to them. I was weeding right underneath the plant they were under, and then I got fucking lit up. But that was my fault.
Yeah.
Leave the wasp alone. The wasps are great. The wasps are pollinators. And so if you talk to them like Casey does, she might be the only one with this skill. But let's say that you can develop the skill. They can be part of your horde.
Yeah.
They can be your army.
Attack. Hey, bees, go tell my neighbor to fuck off.
Yeah. Same way you train your dog.
Yeah.
Just sick them.
Yeah.
Sick them. I don't like you.
Exactly.
And so we're making friends with the stinger machines out there.
That's right.
Another thing that you can do with your attack garden to fend off the future is you can grow poisonous shit.
That's true.
What kind of poisonous shit do we have in our yard right now?
Well, we have a bunch of poisonous stuff. I know the golden dewdrop is very poisonous.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the berries.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
That's
super
a cool
poisonous,
plant.
Yeah.
What about the spinach plant?
The spinach plant, yeah, that's edible only when cooked, otherwise poisonous.
Yeah, not actual spinach, but it kind of looks like spinach and it's sort of like in the shape of a tree. This is the one I don't get. Casey's pumped about it, but it's like, yeah, if you eat it raw, you die. And so you have to cook it like at a certain temperature for the exact amount of time.
Oh, I don't think
it's like mushrooms. Like there's great mushrooms and there's like really cool mushrooms, but you got to cook them. I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe someday when we get desperate, though. So I'm happy it's there.
Yeah, no, that's a. Well, I want to try it at some point, but yeah.
She wants to live on the edge.
I do. I like living on the edge.
What else is poisonous in the yard?
We have nightshade. That's poisonous.
Oh, yeah. Don't eat the nightshade. The berries, they look good. They look like you'd want to eat them. Don't eat the nightshade berries.
Don't eat them, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some shit out there. So if you're like, you know what? These are actual weapons. It's true. Some of them can be.
Yeah.
You know, another thing, too, is that with the heirloom food that we've been growing, some of this is a little bit of a segue, but some of the food has weaponized names. For example, the bullethead wax melon.
Yep.
Pretty amazing name, right?
Pretty cool.
There's some badass food names, Casey.
There are.
We should rip them off.
All right.
There's the dragon tongue bean.
That's badass,
yeah, right?
That's cool.
Like, gardening's not just some frilly shit. You're not just out there wearing your sundress, right? Right, bro?
Right. But see, here's something that we need to talk about just real quickly, a little segue, is the dragon tongue bean is a perfect example. CCR, I gave him some in his lunch last week, and he was showing all the people on the bus, and he said they were all grossed out.
Because they think they know what a green bean is supposed to look like.
Right. And then he said when he was showing his friends, they were like, I don't really care. Whatever.
Sure,
they're not in a video game
or
whatever.
CCR. Yeah.
But the thing, the point is that a lot of the heirloom foods don't look like the foods you get in the grocery store. They're different colors. They're different shapes.
Which is why it's another fuck you, right? What did you say about, she's got a couple face piercings. What did you say about dyeing your hair? It was a big...
Yeah, it was a big fuck you, because what I wanted is if this makes you uncomfortable, I want to know that, because I'm not going to fucking talk to you and you're not going to fucking talk to me either. So this is, as much as I'm in your face, you're in my face.
Yeah, man. This dragon tongue bean is a fucking screening device, man.
Exactly.
If you're not down with the dragon tongue, then fuck you. Stay out of my fucking garden.
Right. And that's just it. You have to be a revolutionary. You have to be so fucking woke to be like, yeah, I'm going to eat this bean that's purple and white and fucking weird as shit looking. And what's weird is like whoever, I would, you know, it wasn't there like a fucking reality show that was eat weird shit? Like, I swear, I think a lot of the stuff that is heirloom, people would be so grossed out at. Like, I don't want to eat a brown tomato.
Wait, it's called a lemon squash. I don't know. I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm scared.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is fucking delicious.
We've also got the Chinese python snake bean.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. There's the black nebula carrot.
Yeah.
Fucking badass.
Badass.
That's fucking badass too.
Yep.
What about the eggplant?
Asswad.
Feed your neighbor some asswad eggplant. Would you like to try some of my asswad? I'm going to feed you some asswad.
What was the bean? What did you call it?
The Chinese python snake bean.
There's also, we didn't grow it. Well, it didn't sprout, but there's like the snake of Mogwai eggplant.
Oh yeah. That one's cool.
Yeah.
Some of the corn. Hey, did you know that corn's actually good for you? I didn't know that until we started growing heirloom corn. It's like, oh yeah, it's got like 10 grams of protein per serving. I'm like, wait, what? Corn?
Yeah.
I thought corn was just like the nasty shit. Pointless.
Yeah. GMO corn or the sweet corn that you would get in a store, I think is an average 2 grams of protein because they've bred it to do other things than be good for you.
I thought it was just like a sugar filler material.
But what you'll see in reviews of heirloom sweet corn is people complain that it's not sweet. And most people are like, well, yeah, because it's not supposed to just be like a sugar delivery device.
And I was reading about some of the corn varieties, the heirloom corn varieties. There's one called the Cherokee White. I'm going to fuck it up. It's like the Cherokee White Eagle something corn.
Oh.
And they said that sometimes the pattern on the corn looks like an eagle. So if you're feeling super patriotic, you know, Cherokee White Eagle, that's fucking bet my corn. My corn is the most patriotic corn in the fucking land.
Bro. Oh, that's cool. That's kind of like wasn't it the Tootsie Roll that you'd look for the Indian? No, Tootsie Pop. Yeah.
I don't know this story.
Yeah, you would, maybe it was just a weird Wisconsin thing. Yeah, you would open it up and if you got an Indian, you were special. I might have just made it up when I was a kid and other people followed me. I don't know.
She was trying out her subversive
Google it.
Techniques.
See if it's like a real thing. If it's not, it's a weird thing that I came up with when I was like 8.
You can use it if you're 8 years old. If you're in Wisconsin, you're into Tootsie Pops and you're like, listen, that's like the guy on Deadwood. It's like soap with the prize inside. $5. I just won $5. I bought soap from that guy. Soap with the prize inside.
Well, I got a little con blood in me. What can I say?
There's the Dark Galaxy tomato.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Atomic. There's an atomic tomato.
Man. So it's fucking cool, man. Gardening's fucking badass, right? So it's badass, right? You can use shit as weapons. You can poison shit. You can throw shit at people.
Yep.
Lastly, defensive plants.
Yep.
Hey, if you're on the edge, like you're into gardening, you're maybe doing a little homesteading and you're like prepping, you've like got your portal windows where you can shoot your archer's arrows like out of the turret or whatever the fuck you got at your house. You can grow.
A moat.
Yeah, you got a moat. You can grow shit. That's defensive.
Yeah, man.
Give me a couple examples, Casey.
Oh, there's the famous stinging nettle.
Oh.
Let me tell you.
It'll fuck you up.
Fuck you up. You put three layers of clothes on and touch it. It'll still fuck you up.
Doesn't matter.
That fucking shit will fuck your shit up, man. And I think it's crazy that people drink it or whatever, eat it in any way, because we have it. It grows here. It grows here quite well.
Yeah, you can make tea out of it. But, you know, people are like poison ivy and poison sumac. Like, that sucks.
Yeah, that sucks. Been there.
But stinging nettle is immediate
and lasting. And when it's immediate, it's real high.
Yeah. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah. There's the century plant.
The century plant. Which, describe the century plant.
So the century plant, it's named that. It looks similar to an agave. Mm-hmm. But it's got really, really sharp spines on the end of each leaf. And apparently some people say it has an irritant in it too. I'm not sure if that's true. And it flowers. It's called the century plant because it's supposed to flower once every century or whatever. But it's not an exact thing. It only flowers once, and then when it flowers, it dies. But it's usually quite old at that point and large.
Yeah, but it's a century plant, but it also acts like a century because you can plant it outside of your doors.
Yeah, and
windows.
If somebody's trying to sneak in, they're going to fucking get fucking owned.
Yeah, it's like, go ahead, scale the barbed wire, make it past the Rottweilers, and then meet my fucking plants.
Yeah. Lemongrass, put that by the front door.
Razor sharp.
Razor sharp.
Razor sharp.
Yep.
Yeah.
And great in a tea.
Yeah, amazing, right?
Yeah.
And like you said, the stinging nettle, it's inconspicuous. The lemongrass, you're like, they let the grass get a little tall. Yeah. Oh, yeah, fucking walk through the shorts on.
Yeah, exactly.
You're leaving in a hurt. Some fucking blackberries. Yeah,
blackberries. And they taste good.
And some of these plants can be used as medicine, you know?
Yeah.
If you accidentally cut yourself on your lemongrass, or, you know, if you're in a big firefight with your neighborhood bike riding kid with your bullet head melons, you know, just pew, 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 back and forth. You can.
By the way, those wax bullet head melons can get as big as a child.
Yeah, they're more like artillery head melons. They're huge, right? They're huge. And delicious.
And delicious.
And again, some of the shit you grow can be used as medicine.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to become like a medicine man or woman, I mean, I think plants is a pretty cool thing. And I think it's legit. I mean,
most of the shit in your first aid kit can be grown outside.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Most. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even stuff for like upset stomach.
Right.
The headaches.
Right.
You know, rashes.
Right.
Like a lot of that stuff. Antimicrobial.
Right.
Salves and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It can be grown outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we hope we've convinced you. That's our soapbox for this week.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of stuff where Casey and I are just like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. And it's a coping mechanism. We call maximum carbon sinkhole our elaborate coping mechanism. And all the epistolary kind of shit. Hopefully you enjoy it. We're trying to have some fun here. But again, I will end by saying that we think that you should grow a garden.
Make time, make space. Even if you have an apartment, you have a window, right? I mean, you can do this. Like, you can.
And I think about all the activists out there grinding, the people that are chaining themselves to cranes and, you know, throwing themselves in front of whaling ships, and people that are out there trying to, you know, get climate justice and trying to get, you know, trying to knock on doors for the politicians. And like, all of like great impulses, and it's wonderful stuff. And it feels bad after a while. It feels bad because you just realize that it's hard to get anything fucking done.
And I think that's something that's really important to say is that, I mean, more and more I'm, and I think this has happened, you know, this is part of the reason why we started the podcast, as I've come to the realization that we're not going to stop this train. It's going. And I have grief for that. And
we grieve every day.
It's hard. And gardening has been the thing I feel that has made me at least say, well, at least I get to touch lots of the things that live on this planet right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to live the way I think we were supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm not going to stop climate change, and I'm not going to probably convince many people that climate change is real or whatever, it's just a way to sleep at night and to eat better and to at least feel like I'm being as positive to this planet as I can.
And we've started talking about our small place, our 3 acres, as a lifeboat.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
And then there's a practical, like, so that's like practical.
Yeah.
That's
and,
a good
and
reason to garden.
And
right?
There's also the survivalist aspect. As yeah. I know the train isn't going to stop. We are going to go off this cliff as a species, probably taking most of the things with us. It might happen. Things might start happening in our lifetime. And let me tell you, one of the things that's going to happen is the collapse of the food system. And guess what I want to be able to do? Eat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know how to do this, because it's easy and it's not easy, right? It's a skill. And the only way you get good at it is to do it. And you want to be good at it if, you know, hey, it's not just tomatoes that aren't year round. They're never. And so are most of the vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we want to be able to eat vegetables.
And that's why when anyone starts talking about fucking geoengineering, I get double, triple, extra plus pissed.
Exactly. Because don't take away the sun, man. You fucking dipshits. Take the blinders off and look at the big picture.
Yeah. So gardening. There is something, I'll say it, loaded word, but I'll say it, spiritual about putting your hands in the dirt. It just feels right.
And broccoli flowers wrong, taste really good.
Yeah.
They're my new favorite.
We recommend you put those in your vegan scrambled egg mix, which we make ours out of pepitas, which is pumpkin seeds.
Yeah.
There you go. So that's gardening in the second world. You should do it again. Just start. Just make some seed bombs. Just throw them in your neighborhood.
Yeah, like just, exactly.
Just the fucking plants, man. You know, if you've been on us with this journey so far, you know, talking to Mark Heinlein, just, you know, the concept of the dooryard and just starting to notice what's going on as a way to track climate change, noticing the seasons change, noticing when the birds show up, you know, getting rid of some of your plant blindness was a huge thing for me. Like I said, before a year ago, even I just saw the outside world as just a wallpaper. It was the wallpaper for human activity to happen in the foreground.
Right.
And you start to undo all that and just like the sickness that you feel, like it resides.
Well, yeah. And I think if anything, what a garden really does, whether it's a butterfly garden or a food garden or whatever, it shrinks your world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need to do.
Doesn't that sound nice? Casey, what's the plan of the week?
Okay. So I have to pause because there's a red wasp stuck in the lanai and it's panicking.
And even though they fucked me up yesterday, we got to go save it.
Good day, I'm Rupert Honeyhole, and welcome to the 10th Biennial Gardening Olympics. This year we've got an interesting group of contestants, don't we, Daisy Hardick?
We do, Rupert. Only one returning competitor this year, to be expected with our spiraling death rate.
Well, I'm sure by the end of the competition we'll have added to the population decline.
The gardeners here are like those at home, realize that we all must return to the garden to feed the plants at some point.
And which competitors do you think are the most likely to be composted this week, Daisy?
I think our mushroom hunters this year are bolder and riskier than years past. We've got Tony Shule from the Old Americas, who's been building up a tolerance to the death cap. So my bet is none make it out of the forest this year.
Ha ha! I wouldn't bet against you on that one, Daisy. But what about the fallout farmers? They've been farming the meltdown lands for a year now in the toxic yields competition. Think they'll survive the exposure?
Good question, Rupert. Let's check in with our most defiant old world farmers now.
Hi there. I'm standing in the wastewater of the old world slaughter ponds. The smell is horrific, but the rice paddies don't seem to mind the fetid fields. Rachel has rezoned 2 fracking ponds with her mixture of rice, mustard, and canola. But this is her first stab at working with plants to clean blood, hormones, feces, and urine from a spillway.
That's great. And what precautions is Rachel taking? Has she retained her pre-contest health grade?
Rupert, her entry health grade was a 4 out of 10, the lowest allowed. While she doesn't look like she's slowing down, I can't imagine, even with a biosuit, she's not been exposed to a multitude of superbugs. Here she is now. Rachel, how do you feel you're faring in the competition?
Is it harvest time already? I'm good. Better than the liquefied animals here. As you can see, the water is clearer than when I started. The ammonia smell is subsiding. Though my bout with salmonella and E. coli is far from over, I do think my... Oh, God! Sorry, my diaper's full.
Well, she's a trooper and a true gardener. Reminds me of a younger, perhaps sicker version of you, Daisy.
She's got my vote. Hope she makes it until the end. Either way, she's really made a dent in that first world eco-hazard. What about our dirt builder in the Midwest?
Let's get Ernie on the line with us. See how Sherry's dealing with the chem dust.
Hello out there. This competition has built some soil. But I'm sorry to say, Sherry has fallen and was returned to the soil she made here in the Midwest, formerly known as the Midwest.
What got her? Was it the airborne lymphoma?
No, she actually ended up getting chronic wasting. Took the Olympic Committee weeks to figure out how and where she was infected.
I thought that was eradicated when we identified and culled the herd of genetically mutated cattle still wandering the cities.
It's true, but it turns out there were roaming genetically mutated milk goats in the area, and just by shitting in the fields, the protein mixed with the first world soil retardant, it mutated, actually, and became airborne as well.
That's too bad, but her worms, it appears, did resoil some of the land.
Her demise has come with a benefit to the land of the 130 million acres of dead land. In 9 short months, she was able to turn 4 of those acres back into fertile soil that only has 52% first world chemical residue, down from 87%. So I'd call her a winner.
Hats off to a composted comrade. It looks like it's time to peek into the 600-meter stinging nettle crawl. Now, this isn't for the faint of heart. Every gardener remembers the first time you grabbed onto that perennial. Hours of sting.
Unless, of course, you're somebody like Sally. She's endured hours in the sting. Built up her tolerance, she says. But I remember my crawl through the nettle.
How could I not forget? Of course, you were the unknown. No one knew why you'd sign up for that. But you won.
I did. 2 weeks of burn ointment. Almost lost my left eye. But it was worth it. I felt as though I proved to myself that enduring is all we have left.
Look at that, Daisy. Sally has made it through the Asian varieties, but she's coming up against the real standout nettle. And look at that, the current world stinging record holder has fallen around a second turn. He came into the competition too cocky, had taken some time off after his mild drudge through the nettles of Africa.
For someone having so much experience in being married to the world-renowned nettle expert who pioneered our second world nettle textiles, I'd think he'd know better. By the way, I assume we're all wearing a little nettle today, am I right? Wait a minute, Rupert. Do you see that? Who is that?
Well, I'll be. Look at that. Coming from a painful start, it appears to be the dentist. The amateur apartment arborist didn't know he was crawling. Would you look at him? His face has seen better days.
At least we know his teeth are probably top notch.
If he brushes as good as he crawls, Daisy, I think you're right. But wait. He's coming up to Sally. His pace is slowing. Thus far, the dentist has been able to nearly plank his way through much of the stings. But the nettle here is waist high. He can't hide his bits from the stings forever.
But look at him. He's clever. He's clearing his way with his elbows, pressing down the growth. The sting, they must be... Oh!
The same time then. Oh, the dentist will feel the sting with every press. He's gone for broke now. Once a man's bits have been stung, they usually walk out. But the dentist... He's plowing through the final stretch, which, at the finish line, if he can endure, he'll find a nice dip in a bath filled with curled and broadleaf duck leaves. Relief may not have come for weeks on his bits, though, Daisy. What do you think?
It's why the ladies usually win this competition. As you can see, Rupert, it appears perhaps a woman is behind the dentist's success here.
And look at that, the dentist! What a crafty gardener he is! Looks like his trainer is none other than the great Maria Urtica, the companion gardening champion 3 years running!
And look at that, the dentist! He's only a few meters away from the finish line!
But he's faltering, Daisy. The dentist isn't a true garden master. He is but a novice, a rookie. He's still gotta pass by the clay puddle. Can he get past that urge for relief?
False hope. He knows that. Maria had to have taught him relief. Only comes with time and dock leaves.
I heard he only grows ornamentals at home. And would you look at Sally? She's red as a radish. Her eyes shut tight. She feels those leaves beyond the finish line. She's making her way shoulder to shoulder with the dentist. Look at him. Flashes a smile at her. A mistake that will cost him. And look at that. Nettle in the mouth. His gums. He's fallen. The dentist has fallen. And Sally crosses the finish line. This was a race to remember. The dentist face down in a puddle. Perhaps he'll grow something beneficial before he crawls again.
Looks like we've got an update to the team competition. Harvest time. Where do the teams stand?
All but one team have the entire harvest in for testing. The overall weight of the crop isn't considered. Isn't that right, Daisy?
That's right. The nutritional value is the determining factor. Let's get the numbers so far.
We should mention that for yet another year, we're allowing the remaining First World Wealth a shot at victory. Well, they don't have a shot.
But they still have guns and oil. Lucky they're captive on their estate, formerly known as New Zealand, where they went to flee and mostly die. Those that remained sure fucked up that island, and they were worried about cats.
Those damn cats didn't cut down all the trees or melt down a nuclear reactor they installed in secret, but they aim to prove their First World methods are better than our labor-intense Second World. Let's see where they stand.
Hi there, Peter Lappin here, the only journalist willing to risk the trip to the remaining First World settlement and also the world's last carbon emitter, which begs the question I ask every year, can't we do something about this?
We've had the public vote. We will not put them out of their misery.
Do you worry about the guns, Peter?
Honestly, I think they've run out of the ammunition, though they stockpiled enough, we thought, to last at least 10 generations. It appears they used up their stash on the remaining wildlife, targets, and each other. Finally, as for today's nutrient competition, they've entered the highest by weight yield yet again.
Is that their harvesting machine? How many acres are they stripping?
The sound is terrible. Can you hear me? This is Peter Lappin still. I can't imagine hearing something like this. They still have cars here. Can you believe that?
And since we don't allow any of their food off their island, we do nutrient testing there, on site.
That's right, Daisy. Total weight is an astounding 3,200,000,000 pounds. Can you imagine? They've got these strange machines, I tell you, that push this, what they call food around.
We need a break here. We've got our first gardener emerging from the mushroom foraging area. It's been 4 weeks, and so far, Joe is perhaps the only survivor. Let's check in.
Good news on the mushroom front. It appears Joe has emerged the clear winner here. She's got a bushel with a plethora of edibles that she's correctly identified. Though she's wary, having consumed a large quantity of Copelandia, Gymnopilus, Inakabe, Mycena, Pluteus, and Psilocybe varieties. She should be coming down here soon, but as far as we can tell, she's not been in contact with the other foragers, all presumed forested. I'm sure the fungus will return them to the trees that need them most.
Great news all the way around. I know that particular forest has taken a while to come back, but no doubt our many mushroom hunters that have taken their final bow in the forest have helped with its abundant and much-needed emerging old growth.
And it appears the nutrient density results have come in. Current ranking for our team competition is No Dig Gardeners are the front runners. On their heels are the Container Gardeners. Hydroponics is trailing with the First World Farmers not even on the charts. Their protein, vitamin, mineral, and micronutrient content are near zero. And while calories are high, their percentage of poison cancel out any calorie gains.
No doubt they'll contest those results. We're still waiting for the start of our individual climate chaos competition, where gardeners deal with geoengineering, off-season frost, droughts, floods, and swarming locusts, aphids, and mites.
Thanks for joining us, and we hope you keep up on our Olympic gardeners. Through their competition, we learn how better to endure within our means. Check your holodial for updates, and tune in to our next live broadcast right after tomorrow's newest rerun of the hit pre-dystopian streaming show,
Tuxedo Supremacists!
KC, what's the plant of the week?
The plant of the week is the pawpaw.
I'm excited.
You should be.
We have native pawpaws growing around our property.
Dwarf. We didn't know what they were. They're the weirdest looking things, and they're one of the few things that survived JP's initial, oh my God, this place is a jungle. Because I was like, no, don't touch these. These are weird.
Weird jungle looking. In a bad way. Like, we bought a house, but where is it?
Yeah, no, it was in a bad way.
So
we, when we started our butterfly garden, we actually bought two pawpaw trees from the butterfly garden in Gainesville, because they're the only host plant for the zebra swallowtail. And that was part of the butterfly garden is, you know, host plants and nectar plants. And so we were like, cool. And, you know, they're pretty and they're little and stuff like that. And we knew that they produced fruit, and that was exciting because we'd never had them. But these weird things, I just, there was something about them that they were so weird, and they don't look anything like the trees we bought.
No.
Nothing. And sure enough, they are flowering now. And through the flower, I was able to identify that these little things all over, I mean, we've got them everywhere on the property. Our pawpaws.
Luckily.
Yeah. And so it's amazing. They are the largest native fruit of North America.
Cool, right?
How cool is that?
Growing in our dooryard.
And I've never even tried one.
Mm-hmm.
Never even seen one.
Apparently, they were difficult to pollinate.
Very difficult to pollinate because the flowers, they emit a rancid odor, and it's not a very strong rancid odor. So they're pollinated largely by flies. And so people actually hang like fish heads over them to attract flies. We're not going to do that. We are going to hand pollinate them. And they also need to be crossed. They have to be pollinated by something of a different genetic variety. So a lot of times these grow by suckers. So they just throw a shoot up from their own plant. So they're all the ones that are together are generally genetically identical, which means they can't breed with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got them all over. So we're going to try to cross pollinate and get as much fruit as we can. And the reason that you don't see them in stores is that they don't ship. Apparently they freeze okay, which makes it seem, I'm surprised they didn't find some crazy market to make billions of dollars with pawpaws, but maybe because they're small and weird and hard to pollinate.
And we've seen pictures of the fruit. It looks kind of like a papaya sort of on the outside and inside.
No, they're shaped like a giant kidney bean, actually.
Oh, okay.
So they're shaped like a giant kidney bean. And I think when they're ripe, they're like close to black, but they're often seen green, because that's I think they go from green to black in like 24 hours, so it's a pretty quick, you got to be right on top of it, and then they rot
then that's it. That's why they're not cultivated, is because as soon as you pick them they rot.
Exactly. So the inside looks yellow with like black seeds, and I believe the seeds are edible too, but don't quote me on that. But it's supposed to taste like custard, which I don't even know if I know what that means, but I'll totally tell you when we find out.
Yeah, having a real hard time conjuring that, especially in a fruit. What does the plant look like?
So, well, the regular full-size pawpaw is a very tropical-looking plant. They have like these droopy big leaves, and they are more tree-shaped, whereas the dwarf looks like a stick coming out of the ground with weird leaves. It's not an attractive thing. It's weird. They get pretty tall, but they don't look like much of anything. But the flowers are pretty big. They start out yellow, they go white, and then they turn red, and that's just apparently when they start smelling.
Yeah, the flowers are legit cool, but otherwise, especially if you have a wooded area like we do, there's a lot of saplings and sticks. But yet, at the same time, like with just a minor inspection, you're sort of like, okay, shape of a tree, shape of a bush, shape of a weed, you're kind of neither of those three things.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why, like, again, after the panic wore off and we started to say, well, what is here? We did sort of identify these things.
And granted, I did show pictures of this to master gardeners.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And they were like, I don't know what it is. It's probably a weed.
You should probably put Roundup on it. Don't leave it.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is a native plant. They should have been all over this fucking shit, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but whatever.
Well, we haven't tried the pawpaw yet, but we are going to get our paintbrush out. And here in a week or 10, who knows, we're going to start. Because like Casey said, the flowers are there, but you got to wait until it's the right the right cycle of the flower before you can cross-pollinate them.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll all happen at the right time. The trees that we bought and planted have just started producing leaves. They don't have flowers yet.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the pawpaw.
That's it. That's pretty cool.
So we're pumped.
And it's indigenous to the eastern United States, 5, 8, and 9. And it depends on the species. I think the dwarf likes this more southern part, and the non-dwarf likes the more northern part. But I think it's like either extinct or endangered in New Jersey or some shit. I don't know. Can you imagine a pawpaw in New Jersey? I can't.
And if you... Where did New Jersey
end up? It's too
manicured
there. I don't know. It's just...
Do you remember?
Did we forget that state?
I feel like we counted to 50, but
I don't know.
Maybe we just glossed over it. Like it's somewhere between Delaware and wherever New Jersey is.
Yeah.
Maryland, maybe.
I don't know. New Jersey just there. Isn't somewhere I want to be.
Anyway. Yeah. Don't eat the pawpaws from New Jersey. No. Are you in New Jersey eating a pawpaw? Have you had pawpaws before?
Have you been to New Jersey? How do you feel about it?
Have you held a pawpaw in New Jersey? Have you transported it across state lines?
Right.
Write us, carbonsinkle@protonmail.com.
JA's plant of the week, it's the teasel. Now, not only has the teasel got a great name because it sounds like weasel, it's also a great plant as well. It's just got something for everyone. It's a biennial, which means you sow it one year and it will mature and flower the next year. So you have to be pretty patient there, guys. But and once it's established, you can't get rid of the fucker. And it grows, it gets very leafy and very tall. And I mean, we grew some in the garden last year and they got to about 7 feet tall. They're pretty monstrous. And they have these leaves that are kind of a bit like the bottom half of a pelican's beak, and they catch the water and the water sits in there. And they're a carnivorous plant, so that bugs crawl in or fall in, and it turns into this kind of soup, which then feeds the plant for its next stage, which is the flowering stage. And for anyone who doesn't know what a teasel looks like, they're kind of like a really giant thistle. And when the flowers come out, they have these big bulbous seed heads about the size of an egg. And they're absolutely covered in flowers. And when they flower, they will just be covered in bees and hoverflies and wasps. And just after they've flowered, they start to die back. The leaves die back. But they leave this amazing spindly skeletal structure with all the flowers still intact. And the plant will stay there until the next spring. It will probably be blown down in the wind or something like that. But the seed heads from the flowers will also feed one of my favourite birds, which is the European goldfinch. And we've just had so many of them in our garden this winter. It's just been a real treat to watch. Now, I think the teasel is an invasive species in the US. But I can't get enough of them, really. So I think the more the better. So yeah, with growing veg, I think it's quite hard to be aimed to be self-sufficient in food in the UK, because very rarely do you have enough land to be able to do it unless you're, you know, pretty rich. But I think there's a number of sort of fuck you elements to growing veg that make it very satisfying. Like, we always make it our intention to be self-sufficient in salad leaves, just because, you know, when you go to the supermarket, you see so many of these fucking bags of salad. They've probably been bagged up in Spain and shipped to the UK, and they've been chilled the whole time. And you just think, what has it taken to get this thing here that's going to rot in the back of everyone's fucking fridge? But I mean, also, I think Casey touched on it when you were talking about heirloom seeds recently. I mean, it's also a great opportunity to just grow stuff that you can't buy. I mean, like, you can buy organic onions and carrots, but there's so many other things you can grow and so many varieties. Like, why not just give it a try and just get out of that? Like, the things in the supermarket are just there because they've got the longest shelf life. There's no other reason. And you find all this stuff is just tasty as fuck.
KC, do we have any listener feedback?
We do. Several. Number one, thanks for the podcast. Prescient. I'm thinking the mortgage stops getting paid when the rich start fleeing to their bunkers. We could accelerate the whole thing if we stop buying all their bullshit.
I don't know. I think they're still going to expect the checks. They're going to be like, we got to make that interest.
Oh, I don't even know what they need. They just need it. I don't know. Rich people with their fucking needs, right? Both physical and metaphorical bullshit. But Homo sapiens are best known for groupthink. And right now, Homo sapiens brains are in the hands of Mark Zuckerberg, Fox News, MSNBC, the New York Times, and a billion ads per day. Maybe we should all collectively stop paying our mortgages. That'd teach him. But then again, Starbucks would close and the caffeine withdrawals just might kill us all. Godspeed. I think, is that his name? Godspeed?
Signed, Godspeed.
I think those are really good points, especially the lack of Starbucks. I think that might kill more people than you think.
I wonder if we wanted to place a full page ad in the New York Times that said, hey, everyone, on April 21st, we're going to all stop paying our mortgages. Do you think they'd run it?
No.
They're gonna be like, this what kind of prank is
this? This is terrorism. This is domestic terrorism. That's what they'd fucking say. Fucking cunts.
And if we said, hey, everyone, we're going to stop going to the grocery store, we're all going to grow pawpaws, they'd be like, send in Homeland Security.
Exactly.
We got to get these two.
Exactly. I think a better ad would be, fuck the New York Times.
That's
all it says.
Mm-hmm. Do not read this newspaper.
If I was a rich person, I would do that, but I'll never be a rich person because I'd give all my money away. Okay, number two. Hey, Casey, sounds like you've got some neighbor issues. I feel you. And agree, azaleas are a great place to hide neighbors. Winky smile face. That's a good one. Thanks for the laughs and the reality check. Ben R.
Ben. Did Ben say they have neighbor problems too?
No. But it says, I feel you, so I feel like
does
that's
it sound
a,
like we have neighbor problems? Have we talked
shit
about the neighbors?
I think the last episode with Art, I was a little hard on killing your neighbors. I was pounding on the killing the neighbors.
How do you kill,
your neighbor?
How do you kill your neighbors with art? I forgot.
I think I was just saying you should kill him for just random reasons.
So that's like one of the through lines to our shit. Maybe we should go back and listen to some of these.
And the thing
we
is,
talk
is
about
that
killing
we
our
actually,
neighbors every week.
We actually don't hate our neighbors personally.
No.
I don't think there's nobody that we know that we hate. All the neighbors that we know, we don't hate. But there's some we don't know that we're pretty sure we hate.
Hey, you know what? We know most of our neighbors' names. Well, okay,
I don't.
Hold on a second. Of our four immediate neighbors, we know their names.
Mm-hmm.
One of them we talk to very frequently.
Mm-hmm. Very frequently.
The other one, he's really old, so he just didn't leave his house very often. But when we do see him, we're like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
And I have earmarked his house if there's another hurricane. I'm going to go check on him.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I know. It's the least I can do, really.
I'm not going to.
Yeah. So you're right. You know, if we think about our dooryard, like our walking dooryard, we don't know most of their names. I don't know. I don't know if we hate the neighbors. I guess it sounds like we do, though.
I think that.
You know what we've said before is that they're not going to make it in the second world, which is 100% true.
Yeah. I think we see them as a liability.
100%.
So.
You know what? You're right.
And they're all baby boomers, so fuck them.
You're right.
So they should all fucking die.
We'd like some new neighbors. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Binar.
I don't know if I'm saying the name right. It's B-Y-N. Bine? Bin?
Okay. Well, thanks for writing in. Yeah. You're right. We need some new neighbors. The ones we got, we could just upgrade.
And we do have a great azalea bush that would hide them quite well.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, azaleas like acidic, so I don't think they'd like the bones. Okay, the last one, number three. Hi, Maximum. Wondering if you could give any examples of good second world art that is being put out there now and in the more recent past. We recently canceled our Netflix and Audible subscriptions. I feel as though I haven't read a really good fiction book in a while. I've got a slew of nonfiction that I've found to be well written and important regarding our current decline, economic, species, and ecological. But it seems knowledge isn't helping. We've known what can and will happen if we continue on this path since the 1960s. I think fiction is what is needed to pull the complacent out of their slumber. Same with film. I'd also like to see more deviant art that makes people really, really uncomfortable. Human roadkill? Tree ghosts? Sentient serial killer appliances? Art J.
Art J? Art J. Like that.
Yeah.
Well, examples of second world art. I mean, you got this podcast.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah, obviously.
As the
you're
know,
welcome.
What we're doing here is art.
We're doing something.
Well, that's a good question because last week's episode talking about second world art and, you know, publishing our manifesto on what it could be and how it should visualize.
And talking shit about current art.
Yeah. We too, I think, struggled for examples. We had some ideas per discipline on what it could look like. I don't know commercially that we've seen it either. So, but what we did decide is that we should start to catalog it when we see it.
Right.
Do you see something that qualifies as second world art? carbonsingle@protonmail.com. But I had a couple other ideas, right? Like get your mind right.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You know, somebody that's into metalworking, they might even be into vehicles. They're just a little off, or bikes, patina, right? You get like a rat rod patina, you get like a rusty thing. Like, don't do that to your hot rod car, but like rusty shit. Is your shit rusty? You're halfway there. You're halfway there. You know what's fucked up though? I wanted to talk about this last week, but there's all kinds of folk art that's made out of like rusty cans and shit, like chickens and and you know, like weird, you know, bears and stuff made out of rusty stuff. You go, you're walking along and these like, you know, really cool, maybe you got this cool area of your town with these art galleries, and then you think, oh, like this was produced by somebody local. Most of that sort of Americana folk art is produced in Mexico.
Well,
here.
We learned that. I can't remember where we were. I think it was when we were in that that Seltzer Springs town.
Yeah, in Manitou Springs.
Manitou Springs, yeah. And that we went to that weird, it had a bunch of really cool metal like animals, which I think is just so cool. And it was all rusty. And yeah, we found out, it was like, oh yeah, we got all this from Mexico. It's mass produced.
And you're like, oh, what the fuck? like American flags made out of like steel oil drums, like rusted to the right.
Yeah, I mean,
colors.
We did talk about the fact that a lot of the art that's made to look antique or old or reused or recycled isn't.
Yeah.
So we talked about that a little bit, but we didn't talk about the mass produced.
So anyway, like, yeah, what is second world art? It's made with the crumbles. So we'll make a list.
Yeah.
Another like stupid example, like they almost got there, was you see the McMansions or the new house. But the house looks like it has like stucco herpes, because you're like, I can tell this was built in 2005, and yet it's trying to convince me that it's got like bricks from the 1800s, like hiding behind the stucco. Like close. If you did it for real, that's second world art.
Right.
But now it's just stupid.
Does that really happen?
Oh yeah.
No.
Especially
shit.
In Texas, you see that a lot in Texas.
Oh my fucking god, that's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, so. Patina hot rods. That, no, you didn't quite get there. The herpes stucco didn't quite get there. But these are some examples. If you see something, we see something. Hey, you know what? Maybe we'll put a page on the website or something.
Yeah, that's a
second
good
world
idea.
Art.
Second world art.
What do you got?
Visual craziness.
CarbonSinkhole@protonmail.com. All right, we're expecting all of you. You've got your orders. All right, we're
fucking garden motherfuckers.
Deploying the truth.
If you want to be ham, you got to garden.
Go ham in that fucking soil.
Yeah.
Hang out with the hummingbirds.
Oh, the
back.
Hummingbirds, man. Just, they're so on fleek. Did I say that right?
I'm never using internet words ever again. Ever. It was my mistake, and I own this. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
I just gotta be honest with you. I'm not one of them bullshit show business people, man. Who makes believe everything is going okay. No, because everything is not going okay.